Rocketeers. Welcome to the... What?
Didn't we rebrand? Are they still Rocketeers? I think we have to call them something else now. Heeries? Togetherons? What do you think?
That's a really good question. We have rebranded. We have renamed the podcast. I think we're going to have to ask them to come up with a community name.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, we'd love to hear your ideas for what fans of this podcast should call themselves or be called. Give us your suggestions in social media, on comments on the website, comments at Podchaser, and the one we choose, the best. What do you call this? It's like a murder of crows.
Right. I don't even know what the name is.
Mm-hmm. Nom de podcast. Give us your best suggestion for Nom de podcast. And you'll win not only bragging rights, but we'll send you a Here Together mug to say thanks. And, you know, some of you might be like, a mug. But we are just so proud of this logo.
We love it.
It's so bold and yellow and red, and it definitely says, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah. You are here.
The Here Together podcast is the weekly podcast for people who crave a sense of connectedness, a dose of empathy, a glimpse of the way forward, and an opportunity to engage. And in case you missed the big news, yes, election, yes, COVID numbers, but the other big news, this podcast just had its first anniversary. To celebrate, we released a Greatest Hits episode through a party and, as we said, renamed and rebranded the whole dang thing.
If you missed the party, fear not. We harvested some of the best moments and arranged them in this thoughtful audio wreath for you to enjoy. We were so happy and grateful to have some of our favorite humans join us as guests and as audience members on Friday to celebrate, as we said, our one-year anniversary as a podcast. Drew and Candace sang us a couple of wonderful songs. Bill Konigsberg, Jim Natal, Matt Ruff all read passages, the perfect passages. They didn't confer together ahead of time, but it was like the perfect potluck. Everybody brought the right things. And some of our smartest pals talked over how to save the world. We also made the big announcement that we are rebranding this very podcast, as we said. After much consideration, we felt that a new name would serve our audience and get our message out into the world a bit better. The Rocket Feather name just didn't make sense for the podcast anymore. It's all about power and wonder, and it turns out that this podcast is more about the experience of sharing time and belonging together, right where we're at. Validate in place, acknowledge emotions, acknowledge pain and struggle, and work collectively to make sure no one is stuck there. Here Together is a much better name for that particular project.
Yeah. And those of you who are fans of the Rocket Feather name and imagery can still enjoy those in the form of our production company, Rocket Feather Creative. Rocket Feather Creative, or RFC, continues to host and produce other podcasts and live streams for businesses and nonprofit organizations. And we're really proud of that logo, that new logo as well. So check that out. But we're really proud, and we're really proud of the new heretogether.us website. That's here-together.us website. And the completely revamped rocketfeather.com portal. Go explore them a bit and let us know what you think. Is there a way that either of those sites could serve you better? We'd love to hear about it. And Kelly has crafted some bold, intriguing clothing, housewares, and logo stickers for you. Both Rocket Feather merch and Here Together merch are available in our pod shop. Check out the links in the show notes or just go rummaging around on the website. Shouldn't be too hard to find. If you don't see the designs you want, drop us a note. Give us some ideas. We'll see what we can do. Mm-hmm. We'll be rolling out new designs as they occur, so stay tuned and keep up to date.
Yes.
All right, the Pod Party Remix checklist. The tape is rolling.
Check.
Caffeine at optimal levels.
Pretty good.
The cats are ready.
Munchie's got his tuxedo on.
I don't know if you all can hear, but he's behind at us right now. And the microphones are hot.
Check.
We are
here together.
So in this first part of the podcast party remix, you're going to hear some check-ins from our guests, the guests who joined us via Zoom and then went out live over Facebook. And a check-in is a tradition, a gathering tradition. It's a way to kind of...
That's how we start.
Yeah. And it's a way to kind of meld people together a little bit to have a tradition of like, this is as you say, this is how we start. And I didn't really realize this was going to happen. Tom Check, who stepped into the co-host role so that you could do, you know, the awesome job you did on social media comments and keeping everybody engaged there.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I, you know, had steam coming out of my ears and sparks flying over here at the soundboard as I tried to figure out how to get sound out.
There are so many buttons.
There are lots of buttons and dials. Anyway, so Tom started off with a check in, which was the prompt for everybody who was on the call at that time, on the Zoom call at that time, was, you know, what's your name? What are you feeling? What's your emotion? And what was your experience on the podcast? Because everybody on at this party was a previous podcast guest.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was a wonderful opportunity for all of us to kind of relive what that experience was like and to kind of catch up. And it, you know, it ended up being this kind of, I don't know what is the opposite of a roast when people say nice things about you?
Yeah. Toast.
A toast. It felt like a toast. It was not what I expected at all, but everybody was,
we got the love.
We got the love.
We got big love.
Yeah. So, yeah, just let some of that love impact you, dear listeners.
We're happy to share.
We are happy to share. So we're going to hear the first three. You're going to hear Adam Young, who's a longtime educator and nonprofit leader. He was in episode 39 about how to talk to teens, where he shared, you know, his feelings and understanding of the power of intergenerational mentoring and training teachers to listen to students. Intergenerational, that's not easy to say.
No, but yeah. You did say it.
Right. And I do a lot of it. And
yes.
And it can be complex to do, but it's really rewarding.
It is satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, and the second one you'll hear, the second check-in is from Candice Devine, who is a Grammy-nominated songwriter and blonde-haired soul diva. She's toured all over the world with
all kinds of big names.
Yeah, like Christina Aguilera, Boyz II Men the Band, not the mentoring group.
Styx. Missing Persons, like a lot of real variety of music too.
Absolutely. And she's really
she can do it all.
Really versatile. Yeah, she's toured all over the world and she ends up in our living room
twice. It was amazing.
It's amazing. So this was the second visit. She and Drew Hall were here originally for episode 30, where they presented their beautiful song
Don't Worry Child.
Don't Worry Child. And Drew is here as well. So Drew Hall, our local guitar wizard and event curator. And Drew is just a really, really generous guy, just incredibly generous. And so let's get to their check-ins.
Yay.
Hi, my name's Adam. Feeling really excited, really happy for everyone involved in the podcast, especially for Charles and Kelly. Full of, you know, gratitude and really admiration, I guess, for just... You know, when I heard they were going to be doing one every week, I said, wow, I didn't tell them this directly, but I thought, wow, how is it possible they could do one every week? And that's just amazing. And they have. So just kudos to you both. It was an honor to serve on the podcast because I'd never been on podcasts either. And I was just talking about things that I knew from working with Boyz II Men, being a teacher for many years, working with youth. So I think at the beginning, I felt kind of nervous about, you know, gee, what do I have to offer? But it just felt just like talking with my buddy Charles, and it felt really natural. And that's kind of how I've been seeing a lot of these podcasts. It's just like hanging with Charles and Kelly, and like sitting in their couch at their house and just hanging with some really cool people.
I am feeling actually, maybe this might sound not as exciting, but I feel very content. And I think that the reason I feel content in a moment of celebration like this is because when people put in hard work and put their passion behind the things they love to do, you get to a place where a year goes by and conversations are had. And it's a really satisfying, maybe satisfying is a better word. I feel satisfied. I feel satisfied for you guys. I feel satisfied that we get to be a part of it. I was a guest on the podcast with Drew, and that experience was lovely. Hanging out with you two was so much fun. And I believe we ended it with me going, can I just come over and hang out more?
And then COVID hit.
And then, you know, COVID.
Yeah.
And 2020 just keeps on delivering. I think that being back feels wonderful, and I'm really thrilled to be here to celebrate you guys. I'm so thrilled you've made it a year, and I know it'll be many more years to come. And the wonderful conversations, insightful and heartfelt and transformative. So congratulations.
You know, I would say I feel proud.
of, you know, to be a part of this and to be, and to see what Charles and Kelly have done. And, you know, our friendship with Charles, for me, it's been quite a while now.
You always do that. That's a far better answer than mine. Make him go first next time.
There's not better and worse. There's just
yeah, well,
real.
You know, everybody says that until they hear somebody say something better than they said. Sorry. Continue with your sincere and beautiful answer, please.
No, it's all good. That was awesome. But no, it's cool. It's good. I mean, you know, I have my Boys to Men. This lives on me. This and my little like winery dogs thing that my buddy made me. You know, my kind of honorary mentor necklace that you guys gave me like 2 years ago. And one of those moments where I was like, oh my God, I'm going to cry. I promised myself I wouldn't cry. But he had all my students like come up to the front of the stage and they present me with this. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, okay, I'm not crying. I'm good. Yeah. You know? But no, it's cool. So I'm you know, glad to be a part of
We're still going to figure out how to make you cry.
It's not hard. And it's okay.
Aw, now Drew's going to make me cry.
I know. He's a lovely.
He's so dear.
Yeah. Yeah. Very dear and generous and capable and talented. We're just so lucky to be surrounded by folks like this.
Good people.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
God.
Yeah. So as if that, you know, wasn't enough.
Right? Okay.
So the
enough
next
heartfelt, transformative.
Oh, yeah.
Admiration.
Why did Candace beat herself up?
I know.
For
she
her?
Totally nailed it. Yeah. What is she even talking about? If she wants to hang out with us, I mean, come on.
She must be cool.
And Adam wants to hang out with us. I would love it if we were that house on the block where everybody wanted to come over and hang out. But maybe that's kind of what's happening.
It is what's happening, Kelly. It is exactly what's happening. We are that house on the corner.
Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's hear the rest.
Okay. So we got coming up, we got Tom Check. Our dear, dear friend, co-host, and frankly, role model.
Yeah. He says, my God. We aspire to be 1/10 of Tom Check.
Yeah. He's incredibly intelligent, wonderfully empathetic, fit. He cooks really well, too. It's just, come on. Come on.
He's the bomb.
He's the bomb. But he's taken all of that and turning it into a life coaching career, helping other people realize
to
their
be
potential.
Tom Check.
To
no.
be as much like Tom Check as you can. No, that's
to
projection.
To be their best selves.
That's not development. That's
them.
Projection. Yeah. And he's this wonderful, you know, kind of unofficial community organizer. And that in episode 6, he helped us really narrow this podcast topic down to that, you know, personal growth, community engagement nexus.
Yeah.
And then after Tom checks in, we have Tracy McConnell, who's another nonprofit leader. And her focus now is also on holistic life and leadership coaching. On episode 25, she talked with us about positive leadership in the time of a crisis. That mm-hmm. episode came out just as COVID was hitting and she was, I think, the last or second to the last person that we had in person.
Right.
In the studio.
Back when people came to our house.
Yeah. And so it was just a perfect time for her to talk to us about what enlightened positive leadership would look like. And we're still kind of waiting.
Right. Yeah.
We're still waiting for that to show up more.
We're getting to see some of that though.
Right.
It's coming.
Yep. And it's some of these people on this podcast and on this podcast party.
Yep.
But that episode went, I think because of the tension around COVID, that particular episode with her, it went deep and it kind of surprised all of us. And she, well,
yeah.
We'll let her
Don't
explain
spoil.
That.
Yeah, no spoilers.
She talks about it in her check-in. And then we finish up with Melanie
Benayet,
whose name I am learning to pronounce. It's not that hard. I don't know why I have to make a hash of it. Melanie Benayet, who's an artist, a serial entrepreneur, a wellness coach, community creator.
She's just a delicious human.
She's a delicious human who gets a lot of things done.
Oh, and, my gosh.
You know, this was kind of part. She was one of the kind of the 3-episode arc. Back in episode 45 of Bouncing Back. And she told really amazing stories.
Oh my God, she's the queen of resilience.
Absolutely. Resilience and change and adaptation. So let's hear them talk. Again, starting off with Tom Check.
Awesome. Well, I'll go ahead and check in as well. Again, my name is Tom. I'm feeling a sense of kinship, even though I haven't gotten to talk to a lot of these folks in a long time, but I kind of know everybody on this call, which is awesome. my time on the Rocket Feather podcast was, you know, it really highlighted, I think, what so many of you have said, and that's just it's the same thing I saw show up at Charles and Kelly's wedding, and that's just that they approach everything they do with such authenticity. It's so them. They're not afraid to be them. And I think for me, at least, that makes it safe to be me. And so when I got done with that podcast, it wasn't my first one, I don't think, but it was early on in being on podcasts for me. And I just took that with me every time I was in a podcast after that. It's like, it's the only goal is for me to be me. So thank you guys for giving me that to go into other podcasts with. And it's just such a gift.
Hi, everyone. It's Tracy here. Hello. I would say I'm feeling jubilant. Jubilant.
That's a good word.
Here to celebrate a great podcast experience. I can speak for my experience. It was much more than I had anticipated. Of course, they always make you feel really comfortable, and you know that you're set up for success with the conversation, whatever it might be. Had no idea that it would travel into the most deep, soulful, philosophical conversation. It was extremely moving for me. I had no idea where it would take us, and it took us deep and far. And I just really appreciate the spontaneity, the presence, I think, that Charles and Kelly bring to the podcast experience. That's not something that can be taught. It's something that is innately beautiful and talented. And it delivers a lot. It really does. So I'm honored to have been on a podcast with you. It's my first experience as well. So I know Bree had mentioned that. And so thanks for introducing me to the world of podcast in such a beautiful way.
I'm feeling really grateful to be part of this community that you guys have been building. I think it's, you guys are doing something wonderful for this area that we live in, and showing the good side of humanity, letting that shine at this time, which is so important. And what I took away from it, from my interview, was I have a lot of crazy stories, and you guys knew how to pull them out of me, which was kind of funny and great. It was a great experience. You guys know how to interview well, and so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you. And I'm just going to interject in here real quick, Melanie. Your crazy stories have impacted other people's lives. Your episode has been one of the most popular, most listened to, most downloaded. So there's dozens and dozens and scores of people who are like, oh, picking myself back up. Oh, being creative. Oh, starting a business from scratch. Yeah, your stories are having an impact out there.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad I can help.
I don't think Melanie took that all the way in. And, you know, I love, that's one of the most fun things is when we get to reflect back to people who come on the podcast, you know, Kate Martin or whoever, you know, we get to reflect back to them what we see and what they make us feel. And, you know, sometimes they pick it up and take it with them. And sometimes they're not quite ready to hear it necessarily. But feeling like we put that ripple out into the world is pretty huge.
Yeah. And I think that maybe that's one of the takeaways. We're just kind of stumbling upon this right now. It's like you and I have to take in all the nice things that
all
everybody
the love,
just said.
Yeah.
And Melanie has to take that in as well. And maybe this is a takeaway for the listeners, for the audience, that idea of like, how do you really want to see yourself?
Right.
How do you want to go through the world? Do you want to go through the world believing all the crap you believe about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know all of the horrible things you've done. You know all of the times you've failed. You know all of
the limits and the, you know.
Yeah, the terrible little things you think about.
The falling short.
Yeah. But when somebody says, you know, Melanie, Charles, Kelly, dear listener, you're freaking awesome. You're rocking it. Like, try just taking that on.
Say yes. Thank you.
I know, it's so
much.
Scary. It's so scary, isn't it? It's so hard to take compliments. You. Yeah. Yeah.
And don't you know, deflect with a thank you. Like, really take it in and just hold it in your heart for a moment.
Yeah.
And I know I've always been, you know, one of those people who's kind of afraid of the other shoe falling. Like, if it's too good, you know, something bad's going to happen or mess it all up.
You're really great, Kelly, except when.
Yeah, pow, right in the face. But I don't think it has to be like that. I don't think it's a mathematical equation of if you take in a compliment from someone, that then something has to even that out. And I think I'm just getting this right now, that it is not, it's not algebra.
Right. It's not algebra and
it's more physics. Uh-huh. You know, what charge are you going to carry around with you? And how is that charge affecting your interactions with others? So anyway, that's my little foray into math and science, which is not my best area, but anyway.
So this is probably a good time for a song then. We can just listen to a song. So this, we're going to play. So Drew and Candace, again, played two songs live on the party, and we were blessed again. They just rolled out a song that was brand new that they had written together. And they're going to introduce it a little bit and then play it.
Pretty new original song that we wrote together back beginning of September.
Yeah.
Played it out once or twice so far, recorded it, live recording, and now we get to play it here.
Yeah, we're excited.
Wonderful.
Very cool.
It doesn't really matter who's wrong. It doesn't really matter who's right. Been in and out of love for so long. I've gotten too tired to fight. Maybe I don't know what you're thinking. Or maybe I just don't understand. Tighter we hold, faster we're sinking. This vision of love that we play. Holding me back, making me feel like I was never quite enough for you, baby. Holding me back, making me feel like I was never quite enough for you. In the chips of my time, and maybe I've known all along to listen to the voice deep inside. Holding me back, making me feel like I was never quite enough for you, baby. Holding me back, making me feel like I was never quite enough for you. Free from all the waiting, the hoping and the praying for something more. I'm tasting all the colors, drinking in the water of what's in store. Time.
back, making me feel like I was never quite enough for you, baby. Holding me back, making me feel like I was never quite enough for you. Holding me back, making me feel like I was never quite enough for you, baby. Holding me back, making me feel like I was never quite enough for you. La-da-da-da, la-da-da-da.
Chills. Oh my gosh. Oh my, I don't know. So, sounds like that song comes from something that happened, maybe.
You know, I love that you bring that up. Drew and I often, when we're songwriting together or with other people, we talk a lot about ideas and themes. And as songwriters, it's really fun to know what that song is about. But it's even more fun to let it be yours and you can decide. Mm-hmm. For us, I will say it is probably not genuinely about what most people would assume.
Okay. So it's a metaphor.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, in a way.
That's cool.
It can apply to a lot of things, and a lot of people can look at it in their own way and how they choose to feel it. But I think we've all had those feelings, whether it be a person or something in life that's holding you back from your full potential.
And sometimes yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's totally what I was thinking too, of just how do you get unstuck?
Right. And I think that was part of the joy of writing the song, is that we were very clear on what the origin of what kind of, shot it into being.
Uh-huh.
But I think we both fell in love with the idea that it could be very personal for any person or couple, mm-hmm. or thing or place, in such an easy way, even though, and I would normally be very transparent about what it is about, but it was such a personal matter that we discussed between us collectively that, I'm going to let it.
It's better left unsaid.
Yeah, I'm going to let it be a little. Unsaid.
And well, that's good. It's the mystery too. And it's nice that you kind of let people fill in the blanks on your songs. I think we kind of talked about that last time too, of letting your songs go out into the world and be
somebody else's.
Yeah. Be, you know, belong to the people.
Yeah. So, like I said, normally I would go, oh, it's about this, or we wrote it about this, or this is where it started. In this particular instance, I think it's just more fun to let you adopt it as your own and let it be whatever you need it to mean.
That song is so beautiful and sad, and I don't know, like there were strains through the whole party that were deep and sad and beautiful, and I don't know, everything just kind of fit together really well. But I love that song.
Yeah, it's been running through my head all day as we're mm-hmm. as we're preparing to record this remix. And I it drives me crazy. I want to know what the song is about. And
yeah, they didn't tell us after or anything.
No. And but
that's okay.
Right now it's about, you know, the moment in the living room with mm-hmm. with the two of them, and about how deep the two of them are.
Yeah.
Collectively and individually. And yeah, really, really powerful. And just because I'm the audio nerd, you know, you got to hear some things in this song. This was like a live, mm-hmm. this was a live recording. There was like, and it was live on Zoom. You heard, I think just Stickles' kid like showed up on Zoom and said something at one point in the song. And the beeping and the booping in the beginning was actually people hitting the like button on Facebook and it binging until I figured out how to turn that off. So that was kind of like the audience kind of clapping for that song. But
that's great.
Yeah. Again, they As you said, this was an evening of celebration and also an acknowledgement. It wasn't exactly mourning, but just an acknowledgement over and over again of depth and difficulty and challenge and resilience and...
Yeah, like full spectrum humanity, like we like to talk about.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, speaking of which...
Speaking of which,
now we're gonna, you know, trigger warning. I guess we have to say this kind of thing. Then, you know, this next discussion is with Bill Konigsberg about his book, The Bridge, and he's gonna lay it out a little bit, and he's gonna explain it and read a little bit about it, and then we'll play some of the questions and discussion that happened back and forth via Zoom, and you even brought in some questions from or some reactions mm-hmm. from the Facebook watchers. The yeah. Facebook audience.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great example just from kind of a meta perspective of like how engaging this topic of depression and suicide and suicidality is. And also just how we can use technology to connect with one another despite Absolutely. being physically distanced like this. So
yeah, it really struck a chord with a lot of people who were in attendance. And it was almost like having a meeting or something. We got everybody felt better afterwards getting to talk about some stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So here's Bill joining the Zoom call and doing a little bit of reading and then some discussion afterward.
Well, the first thing I have to say is that it is amazing to me that I didn't know the rebranding of Here Together, but it's as if I got what this was about somehow, just because the reading I'm reading from is about that in a lot of ways. It's about two characters who are here together. This book is a departure for me. This is called The Bridge. My first five books really were about LGBTQ characters. And while one of the characters in this book is, it's really not central to the story. This is a book, trigger warning, suicide and mental health issues. This is a book about two characters who are depressed, who meet atop the George Washington Bridge. They don't know each other. And basically, they interrupt each other's suicide attempt. And what happens the moment that they sit 100 feet apart, one leg over the railing each, the world actually splits into four different realities. And so we get each of them. We find out what happens when the boy jumps and the girl doesn't. Then what happens when the girl jumps and the boy doesn't. Then what happens deep in the future with people we don't even know yet when they both jump, and then what happens when they both decide to stay another day. And it's a book about options, and I'm somebody who's suffered from severe depression. And I know at those moments when I felt least hopeful, I haven't felt like I've had an option. So I wanted to write a book where I explored them. And the part I'm going to read to you from is from the last section when they both decide not to jump. And this is the day after that. These characters barely know each other, but they've decided to stick together because they have to. There's no way around it. They're very different characters. And Aaron has just had a terrible experience at school. And Tilly has come with him to Coney Island in New York. And they're sitting on the boardwalk. And Aaron has just... for the first time, sobbed in front of Tilly. And she asks him, you know, a question, and this is what happens. Aaron takes a breath and expresses his existence to the ocean. Sometimes I honestly can't even explain what it is. It's just this thing, this feeling in the pit of my stomach. It's disappointment with myself that I'm not better. That I'm not someone people like more, or someone who's more talented, or better loved, or worthy of the attention I seem to need just to survive. To be more like my fish, but the human version. Tilly says, more like human fish? He rubs his forehead. I love my fish. I have a 60-gallon tank and currently 7 goldfish. There's Britney Spearfish, Tina Tuna. Oh, my God, she says, and she rolls her eyes, and her face heats up a bit. He cracks a smile. You're going to leave now, aren't you? She stands up like she's about to walk away and then sits down again. He says, so anyway, they just swim around all the time. You know when you look at something and you know there's no sadness there? That's my fish. There's a nobility to being a fish, I think. And she says, fish nobility. He says, they aren't swimming around in a circle thinking, oh, kill me, this is so boring, which is exactly what I'd be thinking. That's the connection, I think. She crosses her legs and leans back on the bench. You know what? I actually really get that. You do? She says, I do. Ugh, he says. It's hard because the problem is me, obviously. Tilly scratches her forehead in a way that she hopes translates as, yes, I too am the problem, without her having to say it. Aaron goes on. I have no real problems. My dad has enough money to survive. I have a scholarship to Fieldston. I don't get bullied. And I don't know, it's like I know I should be happy, but nothing gets through. She does something that surprises her then. She touches his knee lightly with her fingertips. Then she removes her hands and averts her eyes, embarrassed. She shouldn't have touched him. She hates when people touch her without her permission. But yeah, it just sort of felt like it was a moment that she needed to make contact a little. And that's where I'm going to end. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Bill.
We're together.
But, you know, the thing that strikes me the most about what those two characters were talking about is this idea of this should, that I should be something other than what I want to be. And, you know, the other character mentions that, you know, I should be happy. And, you know, that's something I encounter a lot when working with youth and with other people, with all of us, is the idea of this, I should be something other than what I am. And when we focus so much on the shoulds, then we move so far away about what we are and what we could be when we're in that area. But Charles, what was your kind of takeaway? What did you notice that stuck out for you?
Thank you, Bill. Thank you. Thank you for writing that book. And just thank you for putting out into the world what so many of us feel but hide, because we don't think anybody's going to accept it. And you do it on Facebook all the time. I messaged you, you know, today or yesterday about your vulnerability on Facebook and how it moves the window for what's okay for me. And I thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I heard a lot of what people were just saying, and I feel that that's sort of what I'm writing about, this idea of isness, you know, rather than shouldness, and about just simple connection. And that's why I read that passage, was this idea. Tilly was adopted. She feels very separated from the world. And she just at that moment feels like she has to put her hand on him. And there's something about that does feel world saving to me. How do we put our hands figuratively on those who need that? Boy, am I feeling a lot of that right now in terms of the world, just the need to be in contact with others. How does that open up for anybody else?
Yeah, I totally agree, Bill. I mean, that was the part that touched me the most, was that when somebody's going through something profound, like what words are there that are even adequate? The smallest touch can mean so much, or just making eye contact with someone and not breaking it for a moment, you know, not kind of shifting away because you're nervous or whatever. It's like that, which is, I guess, what we have to do now with our masks on and everything, is make eye contact with people if they're willing. And not a lot of people are willing to make eye contact these days, I've noticed. Someone did that for me one time when I really needed it, and I try to pass that on and do it for others.
Yes. I don't know. My heart opens up with those commonalities. And sometimes eye contact is the only commonality I need, just to know that there's another person there. So that I stop thinking about me, 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 start focusing about we, not the French version.
And my bestie, Michelle Moyer, says the book sounds fantastic, or terrific, she says.
Thank you.
I said fantastic. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you so much, Kelly.
So, Bill, I'm wondering whether or not, and maybe this is too presumptuous, but, you know, you personally and your characters go to the edge of existence. They go to the edge of life. They go to the edge of their emotions. They go where most of us try not to go. And yet here we all are in 2020 with despair and hopelessness and bewilderment for all of us. And I'm wondering whether or not you feel like your ability to write about depression and the edge. I said this to you on the podcast, that we've all got one leg over the railing on the bridge now. Our whole culture has one leg over the bridge. Do you feel like you're bringing messages back from us from that place?
I certainly didn't know when I wrote this book where we would wind up in 2020. And I think it has been a very interesting experience to watch people connect or disconnect from the book, because there are people who really need to read about one leg over the railing, because they need to feel somebody else who's there so they can feel connected. And there are many, many people who love me who have said, Bill, I'm putting this book away until the spring or the summer because I can't. It's too close to home. And so you know, as the author, I did my thing. And, you know, now it's in the world. And
Tanya says, suicidal thoughts can come with feelings of loss. Mm-hmm. Connecting is critical, like sharing the weight of grief, which can pull our body physically down. Don't have to understand or know how to fix, just share. And Tanya's a poet also. She knows some stuff.
That's beautiful. And what I took from that is where it's felt in the body. It's that pulling the body down. Sometimes hearing those words can be powerful. Because yes, me too. My body too. Mm-hmm.
My body too. Because Jessica's got a question. Yeah.
Yeah, Bill, thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm just curious. Obviously, it seems as though you've moved through some of that deeper depression and into a different place. What, if you had to say one or two things that allowed you to move through that feeling, what would you say was the piece for you that helped?
One piece was related to this book and to that reading, and that is simply the understanding that there is no feeling in the world that is only mine. That's really helped me to, 'cause for so long in my life, I felt so alone. And the fact is there, that doesn't exist. So if you've felt it before, if I've felt it before, so has somebody else. So that's in some ways what the book is. It's just an opportunity to share that with people in case they need to hear it and see it.
We do need to hear it. We do need to see it. And I thank you very much. It's close to home.
Thanks, Tracy. Thank you so much. Well, now that I brought everybody down, somebody pick us up.
No, it's not down at all. It's, you know, a moment of, it's poignant. Okay. And yeah, so it's not down. It's poignant. It's that important. So yeah, you have our full attention.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. In a good way. It's a good way.
Mm. Yep, I'm getting some yeses over here in the comments.
That's great. Okay.
So that happened. And, you know, I kind of wrote up this little blurb about it, but, you know, you just heard the whole thing. You know, if I were describing it to you, you'd probably think, wow, that sounds like a bummer. But a moment for everyone to connect around, yeah, me too, my body too, my experience too,
my emotions.
I've felt
well.
That way.
Yeah, yeah.
And what a blessing or a saving moment when there was someone who was willing to connect.
Yeah.
So yeah, it got real at that party.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, I just really admire Bill and his vulnerability and how it, you know, Tom was nice enough to say that you're in my authenticity makes it more possible for him to be authentic. Bill's vulnerability and truth-telling makes my vulnerability and truth-telling more possible, and it helps me feel braver. It's kind of like talking about creating brave spaces, not safe spaces.
Yes, yes, yes.
But this was a brave space that got created, and you and you know, helping make sure that Tanya got her, you know, awesome comment across.
Absolutely.
And, just like I said, I'm really happy that the technology helped Bill kind of throw a rock in the pond and create some ripples, and some ripples came back.
You know, definitely.
I know that we've heard from Bill since this live event, and it was impactful for him.
Yeah, I love hearing. I don't get tired of hearing that.
Yeah.
That we were able to create some kind of a container where things could happen for the people who come on our podcast, for the people who listen to our podcast. That never gets old. I don't think that will ever get old.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so either.
I love it.
I don't think so either.
What's next? What's next? I want more.
Oh, I'm looking at the list of what's next. Speaking of going into the brave places, the dark places, we're going to hear a poem from Jim Natal. Jim was on an episode not that long ago.
Episode 50.
50, big 50. And Jim is a poet and has written 6 books and has been shortlisted for the Pushcart Prize numerous times. Y'all should check out his Literary Southwest event that he promotes, has promoted for like the last 12 years here in Prescott. And I think it's the 13th. Check the show notes to be sure. November 13th, I believe, is when he's bringing in
the next one. Yeah.
Yeah. Bringing in Ben Fountain, who wrote Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, which was made into a movie by Ang Lee. So
Ang Lee. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's going to be amazing.
Yeah. So, the movie's been out for a while. Ben is going to I don't know what Ben's going to read from, but he's got another book out, and he'll be on Zoom and on Facebook on YouTube from Yavapai College. So be sure to check the show notes for the link to that event. We're going to be there. You can say hi via the YouTube comments. I read Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, and I'm looking forward to learning more about the author.
Yeah, you really liked it, huh?
But anyway, yeah, I did. But Jim's going to talk a little bit, and then he's going to read a poem.
That blew all of our minds.
And then we're all going to have a thought about that poem.
Yes.
You know, and I thought, well, maybe I'll read one I know that I love by someone else. But then I said, no, just go with what you got. And I started thinking about, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, middle of the night thoughts, instead of listening to BBC, you know, I decided, well, let me see what I can come up with. And I came up with two that both are rooted in the natural world. And they're different. They're approaching it from a different way. But I think for me, at least, sometimes that's my refuge. Not so much that I throw on a backpack and go out somewhere. It's just that I can retreat there in my mind, too. And just knowing that nature is there, and nature will always be there, whether we are here or not. You know, and a number of months ago when this all started, my sister is an art photographer and does just amazing environmental work. She travels all over, you know, from the Gulf Coast to Iceland to Hawaii, photographing the visible aspects of climate change. And she turned me on to a book by an author named Alan Weissman called The World Without Us. And anybody who's interested, check him out. He does a couple of lectures on YouTube, you know, and where he's, you know, his speaking engagements have been filmed. And it's fascinating, frightening and fascinating, but in a way comforting, knowing that if we're not here to do the damage, nature will heal. It will come back. Maybe not in the same way, but it will come back. So I guess that's a good intro to this first poem, which I surprised myself. It's not a real new one, but when I look back at it, I said, wow, it was written somewhere around 2004, and I could have written it yesterday. So anyway, it's called Animal Planet. This is the hour of hyenas, the hour of crows descending, filling the trees and scaring away the songbirds. This is the hour of the weasels, of rampant viruses, of lapdogs that bite your ankle as you walk away. Now the baboons are on the loose, seizing rocks and sticks, and the wrestling bears have mauled their trainers. Zoo elephants crush keepers underfoot. Siegfried and Roy have canceled tonight's performance. It's the wrong day to wear your pet python around your neck or to feed the piranhas by hand. Even the dolphins are in an ugly mood. They really do have teeth in those beaks. Lemurs and sloths are speeding up, sharpening their long climbing claws. Prehensile tails braid tightly across the canyon. Railroad bridges undermined by moles collapse. The lemmings turn back at the lip of the cliff, and beavers chew pines to block escape routes. Flocks of gulls loiter on airport runways, while winged tornadoes of flies, mosquitoes, wasps, and bees writhe through heavy air. Listen, locusts are humming something, Uber Alles? And from the way they're waddling, the marsupials are packing heat in those pouches. This is no walk in the woods anymore. Picnic in the park, day at the beach. It's a jungle out there. Just ask the wolves, fleas and lice, sharks, raptors, scorpions, gators and rats. Is it time, Mr. Darwin? Is it time?
I have so many conflicting feelings about that poem.
I just wanted to harken back that the name of that episode of our podcast was Poetry, How to Love Poetry in the Apocalypse or something like that.
Right.
I mean, like, that poem was so spot on.
Yeah. Yeah. From 2004. You know, part of it gives me this like childlike glee. Like, remember the Richard Scarry books? Where right. all of the inhabitants of the town, the carpenter was a bunny mm-hmm. and the bus driver was a rhinoceros and the, mm-hmm. you know, the baker was a beaver, or, you know, and everybody was just sort of, the animals had just taken over. And part of me is just like, when okay. I hear like, yeah, when I hear like, you know, the gulls are all on the runway, I'm like, good, great. They're where they're supposed to be. And, you know, and I suppose I could be accused of misanthropy, which I certainly have a strain
of. We have moments.
We have moments. And, you know, and the, there is a comfort. I do feel comforting with the idea that, okay, well, humans, the human species, in all likelihood, is not going to last forever. Even if we get through, you know, we're going to get through COVID. We'll muddle through climate change. Probably it's not going to be great.
Right.
We'll probably be on the other side. But, you know, as a species, it's just, you know, something's going to happen, a meteor or whatever. But like, oh my God, this Earth and life has been through so many extinctions and meteor strikes and ice ages, and life keeps coming back, whether it's in the form of a dolphin or a swarm of bees, or, you know, who knows. But
it keeps thinking up new ideas.
It keeps thinking up new ideas, which I find really comforting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think it's, I don't think.
We can break specific things, but we can't break the whole thing. Like, how tragic to lose any specific species. And, you know, that's a shame for them and for us, but life will go on.
Yeah.
We will foul our nest and have to live with that. But when we're gone,
yeah.
Life will flourish again.
Yeah. Yeah. And my hope and what I work for is for humans to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And be not nice. To be absent from it.
It would be nice.
Yeah. So that if humans
get the message. Because it's, yeah, we don't have to. We don't have to exterminate ourselves and everybody else. That's a choice.
It is. It is.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. That's That's heavy duty stuff too. We party down.
I know, and it's so funny.
That is like, all I'm
and
saying.
I mean, it made us that poem in the moment, and even now, like, makes us laugh and wince and
right,
you know, make cringe and giggle, and it's right. It's all over the place. God, yeah. The more I hear of Jim's poetry, and the more I get to interact with him, the more I'll say it. The more I love him, and the more I love his creative notions. So. Yeah, we'll have to get in touch with him. But yeah, everybody should definitely pay attention to whatever Jim's doing in poetry and events. And
yeah, I want to see his sister's photography also. He said his sister's a photographer.
That's right.
I'm really curious if we can track her work down and put some stuff in the links. We will do that.
And we would love to hear, speaking of stuff in the links, we'd love to hear what your response is to Animal Planet. Are you going to,
oh my gosh, yes.
Are you going to, you know, call me out for the misanthrope that I am and
oh, yeah.
to say, how dare I,
or are you know, you
relegate
say
humanity
you,
to extinction or.
Right. Or are you going to say you just prefer to feed your piranhas by hand?
And right. Right.
Damn the torpedoes.
Damn the torpedoes. Or maybe you'll just send me a Richard Scarry book for my birthday, which
yeah,
is coming up on December 17th. Hint, hint. All right. And we're kind of going to go from one...
one absurdity to another.
Well, it's like Jim's kind of a horror writer in this particular example, right?
Yes,
and,
exactly.
And we're gonna flip over to Matt Ruff, who most recently became quite renowned for... Lovecraft Country, the book he wrote a few years ago. It's not his most recent book, but just in the last few months, it's been released as a 8 or 10 episode series on HBO.
And it's an amazing series.
It's an amazing series. And it's, I don't know how you describe it. It's black horror.
That's
which is becoming a genre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The simplest explanation. But
yep.
Yeah. It's got everything. I mean, it's got ghosts and monsters and magic and paranormal craziness and racism and
yep.
just incredible performances, gorgeous sets,
yeah,
the costumery and the everything about it is incredibly well done.
Right. And the book was well done enough that you couldn't read past the first chapter.
I think I can now because I couldn't not watch the show, but I kind of had to go and watch from the next room some of the time.
Yeah.
But I want to read the rest now.
Yeah. But it was so scary.
It was
so scary.
Well, and painful, you know, the racism is on point, you know, and it's incredibly painful and realistic, and seeing people put in that situation is not my favorite thing, but it's
not your favorite thing.
Yeah. The timing of it is now, you know,
right.
Now the conversation's happening. The conversation has to happen. And that's one of the things that came up in our party is, you know, we need to be able to have the conversations.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
About the difficult things in order to face them and process what's happened and move on.
Right. And just, you know, for anybody who's curious, Matt, who wrote this book, who wrote Lovecraft Country about the horror of racism, essentially, and filled the book full of black and African-American characters, he's a white dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's a white dude from, I think, Pennsylvania. He and I went to school together at Cornell. Not much that's not white about Matt.
Right.
But, and this is what he talked about in episode 35 with us, is like the power of empathy and the power of really thoughtful empathy to put oneself in the shoes of people. Like, he made it sound like it's not that hard. Like, just do the research and just do it right.
Yeah, I think he has a particular gift, and it's a skill I think that we can all cultivate.
I think the initial hurdle is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's what I see. It's what I'm seeing in men in particular now, white men in particular, who like supposedly are all up in arms because they don't want to be replaced
or made irrelevant
or made irrelevant. I'm like, yeah. How can you can't be made irrelevant.
Right.
Like,
you're here.
A black person going to college, a woman making more money right. than you, a gay person being on television.
It just needs to be reframed.
There's something about, I don't know what the leap is, but there's something like Matt has no problem making that leap. His ego, part right. of it is his ego is so healthy. Right. Like he's got no problem imagining being somebody from a marginalized, oppressed group.
Absolutely.
Like that doesn't provide, that's not a barrier to him. He's just like, yeah, let's go think about
curiosity
it.
Curiosity and empathy and sense of adventure, those are the places he wants to travel. He doesn't necessarily, I don't know, maybe he wants to go to Thailand physically or whatever, or mm-hmm. Djibouti or, you know, Tanzania. Yep. But he wants to travel and adventure in other people's experience. And I totally get that. I mean, yeah. You know, we've been readers since we were little kids and we yeah. want to do that too. We want to have other people's experiences and see the world through other eyes.
Right. So I think that's, you know, to link it to the question that we asked everybody that we'll get to toward the end of, like, you know, what do we do to change the world? I think one of the portals, one of the gaps, one of the places to put some energy is just what you said. It's like, go ahead and cultivate that desire to imagine what it's like to be somebody else.
Yeah.
Cultivate that. Live it. Do it. Maybe it means reading more. Maybe try reading books that don't have a white person on the cover.
Right.
If you're white.
Yeah. Give it a shot.
Yeah.
What's it going to hurt?
I don't know. Probably nothing. But anyway. What Matt actually talked about. So we said all of this, all of that to say this, that Matt took the assignment, you know, pretty seriously about, you know, please read something that has to do with the theme. What do we do to change the world? So he read from his book called Bad Monkeys, which he wrote, I believe, before Lovecraft Country.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, it's not one of my favorite books, but now I want to go back and reread it after hearing him talking about it. It's kind of a crazy fantasy book about the elimination of evil in the world. He imagines that there's a group of people who have extraordinary but not limitless powers to determine who's evil and to eliminate them with one of the weapons they use is a natural causes gun, which shoots strokes or heart attacks. So you can eliminate somebody without getting busted for it, essentially.
Very sneaky.
So we're just going to give you the tail end of the reading that Matt gave, because he had to give us this whole long preamble to have us have any hope of understanding what this reading was. And then the reading was fairly long, but it just ends with the main character in the book being presented with a choice between using the natural causes gun on somebody who had already committed evil acts or somebody who was.
Who will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I stared at the table. The gun's a one-shot, isn't it? That's the special modification, and the test is I have to choose. We need to know what your priorities are, True said. In a moment, you'll select one of these booklets. Inside, you'll find all the information you need to complete your first assignment. The other booklet will go back into our files with a notation that its subject is never to be harmed or otherwise acted against by any agent of the organization. So if I pick deeds, Loomis gets a free pass. You'd really do that? It wouldn't be much of a test otherwise. He looked at his wristwatch. You have 1 minute to decide.
You got a minute, Kelly.
Oh, my gosh. You got a minute. What do we do? What do we do? I don't know. I'm glad it's not me.
So that was, you know, that was the extreme place that the main character, Charlotte, had gotten to. This place of, you know, revenge and quote unquote justice versus prevention.
Right.
And as Matt explained in the interview the other night, that Charlotte had a really hard time with it. She wants to have her cake and eat it too.
And it sounds like she gets to a fair amount, but I now have to read the book to find out what happens.
Right. Well, we're going to be faced with this challenge as a
absolutely
as a country. Mm-hmm. And even just as neighbors, like, you know, we have neighbors who have different yard signs in their yard right now than we do.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm really attracted by this idea of actually, you know, putting a note in their mailbox or on their door saying, no matter what happens in this election, we're still your neighbors. Right.
Either that or a note that says something else. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the choice, right? It's like,
right. It really is.
The choice between, because it's like preventing further evil is rebuilding communities, right? That's the pamphlet that nobody's written for us that we have to figure out. Like, how do we prevent further evil?
Right.
And it's not by shooting our neighbors. They were never evil. They're not going to commit evil, but we would accessorize or be an accomplice to evil if collectively we don't figure out how to rebuild our communities and our nation.
Right.
The election's not going to solve.
No, for sure it isn't. But the question that I've been hearing cropping up is, you know, do we just let stuff go, or can, you know, how much acknowledgement do we need before we can have reconciliation?
Yeah, and this is something that we talked about. I can't remember who we were. I think maybe it was with the interview with Tim and Ruth Ellen Alinsky. There are those of us who are more sort of emotionally mature.
Mm-hmm.
And those of us who are, like Matt, more able to put ourselves in other people's shoes. And then there are other people, maybe our neighbors included, who aren't as good at that. So there's not going to be fairness.
Right. If we're holding out for fairness, then that's almost like a juvenile, like we talk about stages of development, that as kind of tweens, we start to develop the sense of that's not fair. I remember saying that a lot when I was a kid, and my parents' response was always, life's not fair. And maybe,
unsatisfying, but very correct response.
Yeah, fury-inducing response.
Life should be fair, damn it.
It should be fair, and it isn't. But how okay can we be with it not being fair? Is another question, you know, like, how unfair does it have to get before we say, okay, that's too unfair? But I think we're getting off topic.
Yeah, we need to have a whole discussion with a bunch of people who are really skilled in thinking about, rehabilitative justice versus punitive justice.
Absolutely.
But yeah, my immature part, who is a part of me and who I have to love and take care of. Like, I can't just shove him under the rug and say, shut up. Yeah.
No, it's not gone. That part will never be gone.
That won't work. That's not fair to that part of me.
No.
So am I big enough to reach across the divide while simultaneously kind of comforting the part of me that wants fairness?
Right.
And can we do it for one another? Can I do it for myself? Can I do it for you? Can Matt and I do it for one another? Can Tracy and you do it for one another?
Yeah.
Can we on this podcast create a community of people who can take a deep breath and be like, man, that's so painful. It's so scary. You know, as a person who identifies as bi, when I think about the homophobia and the bigotry around that, and the people who put Matthew Shepard on a fence and left him to die in Wyoming, and that same subset of folks are trying to prevent other people from voting and blah, 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 blah. Like, I feel furious.
Yes, absolutely.
And scared. And
rightfully so.
But can I put, and I know that there aren't a bunch of folks on the right trying to figure out how to put themselves into my shoes.
No, that doesn't seem to be the case.
There's not a whole lot of folks going like, wow, I wonder what it's like to identify in such a way and to imagine that pain. So can we do that for one another?
Right. Can
those of us in
we
this
as a community help each other develop and deepen our sense of empathy and compassion so much that we have this reserve? And we have this, you know, we can link arms like the people who went and sat at lunch counters knowing that it was going to go really badly.
Yeah.
We need to be able to link arms and go extend love to people that it's really hard for us to connect with mentally and emotionally.
And
philosophically.
Yeah. And I mean, always the first priority is going to be to extend love and care and compassion to those who are marginalized, those who are at risk, those who are threatened.
Yes.
But love doesn't divide, love doesn't subtract. No. Love adds and multiplies.
Exactly.
So, like, knowing that Bill is in his house in Phoenix, feeling vulnerable and raw and open and still writing.
Yes.
Okay. He's got my back, even though he might never know about it. Like, okay.
Right.
That means I can, you know, write a note to our next door neighbor saying, we're still here. We're still your neighbors.
Yep.
And I can put a little note on there that says, because Bill has my back, but I don't need to do that.
Right. Invisible ink.
Anyway, we're rambling here, but I think this is a good ramble because it illuminates more of what it feels like this podcast community is about.
Yes.
So we'll see if this is still relevant, but we're going to play another clip. This is Matt's kind of wrap up of his presentation. So he read that section from his book. We talked about it a little bit. And then this was kind of his, not kind of it. He uses the word moral.
Mm.
This novel was very much about the sort of the desire to make the world a better place. I would say if there's a moral here, it involves definitely a passionate intensity, but also a certain amount of being able to deny your own needs and focus on the bigger picture, and then just the ability to make smart choices and finding a balance between all of those three things. And I think that's what I would encourage people to do in life. In a novel, of course, I'm free to make Jane somebody who's all passionate intensity and not very good at self-denial. So anyway, that's my contribution tonight, the goofy Matt Ruff version.
So I've been calling her Charlotte. Is she Jane Charlotte?
I don't know.
I don't remember the first.
I will be reading the book. I'll let you know.
Yeah. So I think Matt just kind of summed up what we were just talking about. Can we balance those three things with that passion and intensity that I speak for?
It's like fierceness.
Fierceness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Not letting that part of myself that still wants fairness focus on justice, not necessarily fairness, but focus on justice.
Right.
The part of me that also wants to be connected and empathetic, and the part that can make good choices when and where. See the long term.
Yeah.
So this last section of the Party Remix, and thanks so much everybody for listening. This is the last section of the Party Remix is four prescriptions, four more kind of bits of advice or thought or sciences about how, what to do to change the world. That's how we framed it. What to do to change the world. And they're all a little different, and they have some commonality. Stacia Rivera, who we haven't heard from yet on this podcast, is another coach around relationship and communication and athletic performance as well. We're actually going to talk to her about
whipping
us into shape.
Yeah. Yep.
We'll hear again from Adam Young. We'll hear from Tracy McConnell. And we'll hear from Jess Stickle, who is, another coach. But she's also a counselor working in the school system. I've had the opportunity to collaborate with her on a bunch of different things. You've had a chance to collaborate with her on Full Circle Mentoring for Girls. Very smart, very compassionate, very wise.
Very positive.
Mm-hmm. And she has three children, at least one of whom you're going to hear in the background. I believe
it's your favorite one, I think.
Anyway, so you'll hear first off from Stacia what we need to do to change the world.
I'm going to piggyback on Bill, if that's okay. Thanks for having us. And Charles and Kelly, you guys are amazing. And you ask the best questions. So when I got this one, I wasn't surprised. But I really am in alignment with what Bill said. And I feel like we need to restore the art of having tough conversations and putting religion and politics and sexual preference, whatever the topic is, back on the table and learn the art of grace and communication, and that's really what builds our connections and forges our tribes and, you know, for our sense of belonging. And it's sad that we've given up that skill set. And I, you know, I teach that skill set. I believe in that skill set, and I know we can learn again. And it's just really important.
You know, working with Boys to Men really opened up my eyes to the power of listening. And, you know, I remember talking with Charles a long time ago, you know, the voicemail model of, you know, we're not leading youth anywhere. We're walking with them. And I think part of that willingness to walk is to that willingness to listen. And that's something that I know all of us can do. And if we want to change the world, it's not that we need to be better role models for the youth. It's we need to listen to what they have to say, because they really are the future. And I know it's a cliche, but it is true. And I think the way that starts with all of us is just being willing to listen more and put aside what we think we know and just listen.
Deeply involved over the last 30 years in community organizing and dealing with tough issues in community like substance abuse recovery, and that was really powerful work. And doing it on a collective level is there's no experience that's like it. It's communal and tribal, and you're part of a solution, and you meet a lot of different people that way. I believe in that collective volunteerism. I also believe that we have to, in these times especially, understand where are we coming from as an individual. So I'm supporting work that's about designing your own destiny, really understanding, how am I? How am I really doing? What's my well-being? How would I qualify that? What are my strengths and my talents? What's my vision, my life vision? What's my mission here? And with that clarity, then that intentionality, then I think that we free ourselves up to do so much more in the world, that we are part of the solution if we're also looking at who am I and how am I standing in the world.
Yes, hi, I'm back. I'm also wearing the hat of mother today. And so, you know, speaking of changing the world, I would say that it happens in our homes, right? So I just actually had to separate the two brothers and remind them how to treat each other. And if they can't be kind to each other, then maybe they need a break from each other. And, you know, how would they work that out? And so I really think that that's what it is. It's, you know, I shared this in the podcast that I did with these guys, and I didn't get to chime into that part. So I do want to acknowledge and honor that it was really, really wonderful to be a guest on your podcast. And it was, I think, my first podcast I did. So thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of that experience. And that was really what we talked about, was this idea of, you know, modeling what's available. And I think that can be so powerful, and it can happen in our own homes. It can happen in our communities. It can happen in our professions. It can happen, you know, just in the grocery store, right? And so being able to get to this place where, just a second, I might have to pause. I have another little one coming in. But being able to, you know, allow ourselves to honor other people's experience and not take it personal, and just really hold space for that person and recognize that there's this place of articulation and acknowledgement that is so powerful.
So yeah, that was just a few really smart, big-hearted people talking about the topic of what do we need to do to change the world.
Yeah, and listen, listen, listen. That's what I heard in every single take on that question. Some variation on listening better.
Yeah.
And you're constantly helping people to understand the value of taking care of ourselves so that we can put our own emotional responses to the side for just a moment, you know, long enough to make space to really hear somebody else.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're reflecting that back on me, because I'm feeling right in this moment of just, you know, that 14-year-old and that 3-year-old in me who just wants to be heard and is just fierce, and like all this talk about listening and being empathetic and like, who's going to listen to me? And again, it's like you are. I am surrounded by people who are going to listen to me, who are going to listen to my passions and my plans and my hopes and my dreams and my fears and anger. And Jess used the word intentional in there. I can't remember exactly what context she said it in, but I think one of the takeaways for me in this recording is just continuing to be more intentional. This is exactly what we started the podcast with, you know, God damn it, now you listen to me, mm-hmm. was the first story we told on this podcast. And figuring out how to be intentional about being heard as well as staying committed to the listening. I think there's something that there's still more that I have to say, I think. And I'm running this podcast that's all about listening. So it's a tough balance, just like Matt was saying. It's like, I got to balance all of these things.
Yeah. Luckily, we can just keep practicing until we die.
Yep. Just keep going until we get run over by a bus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was a lot about me and my struggles. What's it been like for you re-listening to this? And what was it like being at that live anniversary party?
Well, I always think I don't like parties, but we should definitely do something like this every year. I mean, to, you know, mix it up, whatever. But mm-hmm. I just feel so full of love and gratitude and connection with all of these amazing people. And our audience is starting to expand out to new people we don't know. And that's really exciting.
Yeah.
But this virtual get together really helped me see so much more clearly the value of what we're doing. And now Munchie is heaving on my lap.
The podcast
has a little belly quirkiness. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, baby. But anyway, this virtual get together really helped me see more clearly the value of what we're doing. And it inspires me to dig in and give more to it. It means so much to feel like we're actually providing value to our fellow humans and putting love and light out into the world. It just feels amazing to have that, you know, reflected back to us.
Yeah. What a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
What a great gift that we have and get to keep passing on. And I just want to take this moment to thank all of our special guests. There were 13 previous guests who came on the live stream and, you know, gave of themselves and gave of their time and, you know, said nice things about us, said nice things about the podcast. And then there were, I think, 30 people who joined via Facebook, 25, 30 people who joined via Facebook, and more people have been watching it non-live. A little pro tip, though, and we'll put the link in the show notes and on Facebook. Watch the YouTube video rather than the Facebook Live. The sound quality in the YouTube video is much better than the Facebook Live. And we'll even, I'll go through in the next day or so and put some timestamps in the comments of the YouTube video. So you can jump right to what you want to see.
Yeah.
So,
you can get to those readings and the songs and all of the good stuff. You can find what you need with it, you know, without having to go through stuff you don't want.
Right. And so just some things that aren't on this podcast that you would want to go to that YouTube video for. There's another poem that Jim reads.
Mm-hmm.
There's the whole interview and reading with Matt Ruff that's much more extensive than we had time for here. There are more suggestions about what we can do to change the world, including some great stuff from Kelly. So, you know, it's not all here in this podcast. So you might want to check out that YouTube as well. Plus you get to see everybody's face and you get to see Candace and Drew perform.
And you get to see a podcat.
That's right. That's right. Munchie the podcat and his hind end show up in the web camera at least once. Visit here-together.us. Here-together.us. Isn't that appropriate?
I know. I love it.
Here Together Us. To check out show notes, this is the new website for this podcast. Check out the show notes there, episodes, get some togetherware
with
the awesome, bold, what do you call it? The pin drop logo or the location logo or?
I don't know. I think we got to figure out some of that.
Yep.
New terminology.
As always, we welcome your thoughts, questions, and feedback on our website and social media. We love you so much, and we will leave you now with our favorite pod song, Don't Worry, Child. Again, Drew and Candace performed this the first time. No, they didn't perform it live for us in the...
Oh, we did the video, didn't we?
Yeah, we played the video, so we got to include the video on the episode, whatever, 35 or whatever that was, but now you get to hear the stripped-down duo acoustic version of Don't Worry, Child, which... It's kind of the unofficial theme song of the podcast. And for me, it's the unofficial theme song of
2020.
Of 2020. Yeah. You know, it's basically, it's going to be okay.
Hang in there, pal.
Hang in there.
So here it is. Don't worry, child.
Just fine. You'll
Bye.